The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic. Alongside me as ever from The Athletic, football news reporter Matt Slater. And today we are going to focus on the possibility of a European Super League or the restructuring of the Champions League. We're going to talk to two executives from European leagues. Now, that's an organisation that works with the Premier League, the Bundesliga, La Liga and others to lobby against the more radical proposals for European club competition reform. Welcome to the Business of Sport from The Athletic. So to start, Matt, we're going to look at what I suppose you would call the ongoing power struggle between UEFA, Europe's richest clubs, the domestic leagues as well.
To bring us up to speed with where we're at now, I think we should probably go back to 2019. As we know, broadcast contracts, commercial contracts run for a few years in advance. The current setup in Europe of the way the Champions League is arranged and sold takes us up to the end of the 2023-24 season. So that's all sorted. It's all nailed down. Every 3 years, we kind of have an argument about how to distribute the money, but the actual formats are decided. As I say, the big broadcast contracts, the big commercial contracts are settled. So 24-25 has been there for a while as a potential fresh start. Now, things have kind of been pretty set since about the mid-90s when we went from the old-fashioned European Cup, where it was, as you say, a straight knockout champions, to the Champions League, which is, of course, got, you know, we've all got used to this, where they're not all champions in there. You know, the top, you know, the big five leagues can get four or three teams in. And it's been that way for a while. 32 teams make the group stages of the Champions League. We used to have three competitions. We went to two competitions. We're heading back towards three competitions. But pretty much the Champions League has been set since the mid-90s. Now, in 2019, early 2019, it became very, very clear that Europe's elite, who have become elite in this era, largely because of the rocket fuel of Champions League money, they got kind of lucky. We've always had big teams, we've always had small teams. That's nothing new. It's just that the big teams in the 90s have become super teams. Their advantage got compounded year after year after year by qualifying for European football. And that elevated them, created these crazy gaps that we've seen in European football that we see in domestic leagues too. Now, in 2019, as I say, various sort of pressures going on. Games got very global. The ownership structures and teams all around the world are changing. It looked like we were heading towards around about how we divide the cake again. Who is really driving the football industry? Is it the super clubs? Is it the domestic leagues? And the idea that came around, and it really kind of, it was very radical. I think it was intended to be radical, was to change the Champions League into something that looks an awful lot like a European Super League, which has always been the bogeyman. If you don't give the big clubs what they want, they will take their ball away and they will form a closed NFL-style European Super League. Now, the plan, I don't want to go into too much detail on the plan, but it was to sort of divide Champions League, Europa League, and this new competition, the Europa Conference League, into kind of like sort of three competitions that all sit together. There'd be promotion relegation between them from season to season, and crucially, there'd be retained places. So the key thing that I think upset everybody was this idea that if you were in the Champions League 1 year, well, 24 of you would stay there the following year. So you would break that gap, that crucial gap, that link between domestic performance, i.e. how you do in your national league this season to qualify for next season. That link would be broken because you'd have these retained places. And there were extra games and they were going to change the sort of competition format. So it was more games because the big clubs want to play each other. Barca want to play Bayern. Liverpool want to play Real as many times as they can, not have to wait 5-6 years. And it was these retained places. Now that was shot down pretty quickly because it looked like a plan that was cooked up by the big clubs and UEFA to head off this European Super League idea. But the leagues, fans, even players went, whoa, that's too much. We don't like the retained places. We don't like that. That sounds like too much European football. So the whole thing was parked. Then COVID comes along and almost no one talks about it for a year. Now, inevitably, because of that, as I say, 23, 24, we know we have to sort of do this. And the European League stuff starts again. Real and Barca, we've talked about their debts. Various big clubs are thinking, we need to do something about our balance sheets. We're the big dogs here. We drive the industry. The plans sort of come back, but it's come back in a different way. It's not as radical as that. The main things are this Swiss model, which we've been talking about. It's borrowed from chess and various other sort of tournaments to do that, where you're in a league structure. So the Champions League will go from 32 to 36 teams, but you won't have to play everybody. You'll just play, it's very scalable. You can play 6 games, 8 games, 10 games, 12 games. The big clubs want to play 10 games. They want to go from 6 guaranteed group stage games to 10 group games. As I said, it goes from 32 to 36, so more teams are in it. And I think people kind of don't mind that. The sticking points, and we're going to hear from the European leagues who represent the domestic leagues, is that there are still those 4 extra places are not going to be dished out as the plan is right now to national champions. They're, you know, based on, as I said, on domestic performance. One of them will go to France to bring France up with the other 4 big leagues. So they've got 4 guaranteed places in the way that the Premier League and the Bundesliga and Serie A and La Liga do. But the other 3 will be dished out on some sort of historic performance basis, which sounds a bit, hold on a minute, you haven't deserved it. You didn't qualify. You're getting it because of your sort of historic performances. So it's a safety net for, dare I say, the Liverpool, you know, the way they are looking right now, or Arsenal or Spurs. The teams that have sort of come 5th, 6th, 7th. So that's where we're at. We had a big row in 2019. It went quiet for a bit. It's come back. And we are, I think, hurtling towards a decision. People don't mind the innovative Swiss model bit, but there are still some rows to be had about the number of games, because going from 6 to 10 is actually 100 extra games. And then there's, of course, a colossal row that we're probably going to have, I don't know, in a couple of months' time about how you distribute the money. That's it. More European games, how you qualify for Europe, and then how you cut the cake.
Okay, well, Matt mentioned European leagues. They're an organisation that works with professional football leagues across Europe, and he also mentioned Jaco and Alberto. So Jaco Swartz is the managing director. Alberto Colombo is the general secretary. To both of you, and Jaco, you go first. Any restructuring of European football and the threats that come with it from the big clubs are always in the end about them just getting more money. Is that it in a nutshell?
You're absolutely right. If you want to bring it back to one line, it is about finding a format which will deliver more commercial revenues. First of all, I would like to say we do not dispute everything in European football. We do not dispute that there have always been differences between big clubs and smaller clubs on a European scale, but also on domestic scales in each individual competition. When we come to the comparison between what was proposed back in 2019 and what has been proposed now recently, I would say you could clearly see 2 major differences, which are in fact both to the benefit of the entire system, I would say. In 2019, the proposal was to create a closed competition for the Champions League, and you explained that just before. That's one thing. And the proposal in 2019 was also that the competition would be still played in, let's say, the current format with traditional group stages and then a knockout stage, etc. Maybe with more teams, maybe not with more teams, etc. Now, if you compare this to the proposal which is at the table, which lies at the table right now for the Horizon 24 UCC reform plan by UEFA, the good things which changed compared to the proposals in 2019 is that all access to the competitions will come from the domestic competitions. We do have an opinion from which leagues should be able to qualify for which competitions, domestic champions and things like that. But that's a very major improvement compared to the proposals in 2019. And the other thing, which is really innovative, is the fact that they now change this format, that they come up with this Swiss model, which is really something new in football, and which is, I think, at least very interesting to see how this will work out. And I can understand UEFA that they have a lot of enthusiasm about this proposal. Yes, but coming back to your question, Mark, if you bring down, why are they doing this? Because there is a need and there is a pressure from the biggest clubs, that they want to get more money out of UEFA club competition, international competitions, not only the biggest clubs in the biggest leagues, but also quite some of the biggest clubs in, let's say, some of the medium-sized leagues. It's not only the request to get more revenues out of international competitions, it's also about the fact that those clubs are looking for more stability, more certainty to qualify for those competitions, as well as when they are in the competitions that they have more matches. And this is all fine, but this is also where we have some, let's say, twisting between our positions representing the domestic competitions and the individual club positions or UEFA competitions, because we see a growing negative influence on the competitive balances in domestic competitions because of the fact that those clubs who regularly participate in UEFA club competitions, that they make a lot of money, they play more matches, their player, they do have another level of exposure for transfers, etc. So it is piling up all kinds of factors, which is making those clubs even bigger than they're already used.
Alberto, what would you like to add for your first statement? And then we'll drill into some of the points that have been made.
The most important things is to try to find a balance, you know, and to find and to have a proper equilibrium between the sustainable development of the Champions League. Try to listen also to the ambition of these big brands, big clubs. But on the other side, also try to grant what is, you know, the bread and butter of football, you know, and the bread and butter of football for more than 1,000 clubs in Europe, and there are millions of fans across Europe, is domestic football, you know, so that it is fundamental to try to create a model, especially now, you know, consider that we are having this discussion during a COVID era, you know, and try to guarantee and safeguard the long-term sustainability, both from a sporting, but also from an economic point of view, for the base of football, and the base of football is spread all across the territories in Europe, you know, it's fundamental. Our aim is try to create, let's say, an ecosystem that could guarantee both the ambition of those big clubs that wish to have more revenues and more matches in Europe, but on the other hand, granting a proper sustainable football for all, you know, the clubs and the respective players and the fans across Europe.
And do you think, because this is the crux of it then, do you think creating that ecosystem is possible? Because as a fan and a broadcaster, you hear all the different points of view and you think, I don't understand how everybody can be brought together to create this ecosystem when there are such differing views.
We believe it is possible. The Champions League has been a successful story, and there's been always this balance calendar-wise, right? The leagues are playing during the weekends. Champions League is playing sometimes during midweek. The leagues are those that are delivering constantly their calendar, you know, through the years, and the fans love that. You know, it's a tradition. They go to the stadium with the friends, with the families, and the Champions League is the cherries on the cake. You know, now if you're lucky to be qualified, then you can enjoy your participation, whether you are, of course, a player of a club or a manager, or whether you are simply a fan, you know, that, you know, and this seems to be something that is there on the calendar, not in a regular way, but just from time to time, is what made the participation to European competition something unique and something great, you know, so that there is this equilibrium and leagues, you know, and I'm pretty sure that you got also familiar with a study that we perform and we launched in past December that is called, you know, the European, the financial landscape of European football, where you actually saw that football has been growing with an incredible rate, you know, during the past, let's say, 20 years, especially during the past 10 years, you know, so that the business is growing, the passion of the fans across the world is growing, you know, so that this means that the industry has developed in a good way from a revenues point of view. But on the same time, we have also been experiencing, let's say, this tendency that season after season, this gap between a few big clubs and the rest was also growing. And, you know, you can arrive on a point of fracture. You know, this is why this moment is so important, you know, in order to, because you might know that this decision that UEFA and in general the football stakeholder are taking now could could, let's say, shape European football for at least the next decade.
Let me maybe add to this, Mark. Also, when we speak about the decision making, it's a decision which is going to be made by UEFA. UEFA is the governing body of European football. They have to take care of the interest of all parties involved in European football. If we look at the leadership at UEFA, the president of UEFA, who's coming from Slovenia, Mr. Zeferin, the general secretary, Theodoridis, who's coming from Greece, they're not both not coming from two of the, let's say, main powerhouses in football originally. I'm 100% convinced that those two gentlemen, those two leaders at UEFA, that they very well understand where we are aiming for. I also understand that they do not only have to deal with the interest of us, not only you have to deal with the interest of Greece or Slovenia, they have to deal with all the interest. With their background, it would be very logical that they will do everything what is in their within their capabilities to find this balance, as you mentioned, and which means that at a certain moment, they also must dare to say to the biggest clubs in Europe, until here, and this is where it stops.
The main point is that point I was making in the intro, that Champions League money, the Champions League has been a phenomenal success. It really has. It's been one of European football's, it's been one of professional sports' success stories of the last 20 years. It has taken football around the world. It's created global stars out of our stars, out of Ronaldo and Messi. It has put them on the same pedestal as the very best NBA, NFL players, and perhaps even bigger. If you look at their social media followings and what have you. So the Champions League has been no one can dispute that. And UEFA have done a fantastic job. And it has made actually UEFA the richest, if you like, organisation in global football. They're richer than FIFA. And that's a source of considerable friction. What the report said is it proved something that I think deep down, particularly if you don't follow one of the big clubs in your country, you've suspected. Is my league getting more or less competitive? Is it the same teams that aren't just sort of, you know, winning, coming third, second, third, fourth, fifth, winning the cup competition as well? Do I remember more variety of winners when I was a kid than I get now? And if you have that suspicion, you're right. It can actually be, it's not even really a dispute. Particularly, well, it's not every league. I was going to say particularly the big leagues. It's every league. And in fact, in some of the medium-sized leagues, it's even starker because that team, that one team that gets into the Champions League has a 15, 20, 30 million euro advantage over the rest of the league. And it's not just one year, it's the following year. It's the year after. So if there's a good player on the second or third best team in that league, they just buy them. So you get these 8, 9, 10 in a rows that are happening, and not just in Scotland, but all over the place. That is one of the problems. So, chaps, Jaco, Alberto, how do you fix that? What do you do about the distribution of money to help the competitive balance return?
It is not only about the UEFA club competitions who are distorting competitive balances. There are also many topics in this landscape report which we should discuss internally between our leagues, for instance, on the distribution models of the domestic revenues as well. But that's now we speak about the UEFA club competitions. But I want to express this because we do not only want to point fingers at others. Coming back to the influence and the importance of UEFA club competitions, the analysis shows that in average, all across Europe, 85% of the UEFA club competition's revenues end up at the top three clubs in the competition. And this is definitely not only the case in the top leagues, it is more the case even in the smaller and the medium-sized leagues. We think that it's very important to agree on three principles, also when it comes about revenue distribution for the UEFA club competitions post-24. The first one is that we think that in general, a bigger share of the total revenues should go and should be distributed amongst all those clubs who do not participate, but who do, and we don't see it as solidarity. It's in fact, it's compensation. It's compensation for the fact that we deliver the dates, exclusive dates for the UEFA club competitions. And exclusivity in this world is very important because that delivers a lot of commercial value as well. So it drives the price, I would say, to higher levels for the media broadcasters to buy the rights for their domestic territories of these UEFA club competitions. And another thing is that we should not forget that the foundation, the heart of football, comes from the domestic competitions. So the UEFA club competitions are a result of everything at the end, what's happening in all the domestic competitions all across the continent.
Jaco, so is that compensation for every club in every European top division across the continent? So if you finish 8th in the Polish league, and that you will get a slice of the continental pie.
That's the idea, and it is too detailed now to explain how this is worked out in what it means for this number 8 in Poland. But in fact, this is the idea, and it is now already 4%, or already it is now 4% of the total revenues, which is used for this purpose. And we really believe that it should be more. The second principle, what we would like to agree on with UEFA and the stakeholders related to financial distribution, is that if it comes to the distribution amongst the three UEFA club competitions, and you are all aware that as from next cycle, there will be the introduction of the Conference League. So you have the Champions League, the Europa League, and the Conference League. And we think that the share which is used to distribute it to the participants within the Conference League and the Europa League should be more compared to what is used for the Champions League. So it means less money to Champions League, more to Europa League and Conference League. And finally, our principle would be, what we really would like to agree and to discuss, is that the distribution within each of those three competitions should be more equal. So now we have systems, and this is also very detailed, of this coefficient pillar, for instance, which means that because of the fact that Real Madrid won the Champions League for about many, many times, that they get more money out of this pillar compared to Red Star Belgrade if they would qualify for the Champions League.
Just on the compensation then, and there's going to be no perfect system here, does that distort the football pyramid in each country? So if that compensation, say, goes to all 14 Premier League clubs who aren't in Europe, does that give them an even greater advantage than those in the Championship who are trying to get into the Premier League, because you've given them even more funds through Europe? I mean, nothing's going to be perfect, is it, Jaco?
Nothing is perfect. You're absolutely right. And it's a domestic a negotiation and discussion and agreement which has to be found, how the money which is meant for the non-participant is distributed. For instance, in Germany, in the Bundesliga, this sum of money is fully used to distribute amongst the clubs who play in the second Bundesliga. So it is not ending up with the non-participants in Bundesliga, but it is distributed amongst the clubs in the second Bundesliga. In England, you have the system of the League Cup, which is fully commercially adopted by the EFL. So, I mean, it's not up to me, it's not up to us to say to the Premier League, you should do it like this, or to the Bundesliga, you should do it like this. But in general terms, it is money which is meant for the non-participants, for the non-participants of the UEFA club competitions.
Alberto, explain to me this and how you balance the differing views within your organisation and the different leagues in your proposals and your meetings. Because, for example, Bordeaux are mid-table in Ligue 1 at the moment. We've discussed that the French league will get an extra place on the basis that they're the only one of the big five not to have the same number of places. So for no other reason than they're a similar, you know, big Western league, we'll give them an extra place. So Bordeaux might think, great, well, we might have a chance of finishing fourth in the next couple of years. We'll take that. How do you balance that with, say, then, Bodo Glimt in Norway, who have been unbelievable this season, won every single home game, have won the league by 19 points, and we'll go, well, hang on the basis of how we have rebuilt our club, how we have played, how we have dominated the Norwegian league, we ought to have a crack at the Champions League as well, or whatever the new format is. How do you balance those differing views from not the big clubs within your organization?
All the discussion also regarding this additional spot, probably to National Association number 5, is coming from the decision that was taken during summer 2016, right? Where the top four national association got four fixed places in the Champions League, you know, having, like we have right now, you know, basically 50% of the clubs, 16 over 32, coming from the top national association. There was probably a feeling at the time, a bad feeling from, French football that they were, put a bit, aside in this. Right now, if you consider that there is this expansion, right, that is the expansion for 32 to 36 clubs. Of course, French football probably had, their own arguments in order to see a bit more of balance when compare, their merits compared to the merits of the top four. But what is an argument to discuss here is something absolutely important is the fact that there are four extra spots, and in our proposal, proposal of adjustment when compared to the UEFA original proposal, is exactly what you were referring. We want absolutely to give priority to, sporting merits as the only and sole criteria to assess the competition, so that Jaco a few moments ago was mentioning, the coefficient taking in consideration historic and sport results as a criteria to distribute the money, and something that is probably unfair. The same principle for us also apply to qualification. We don't see that clubs should qualify thanks to what they have achieved, in European club competition in the past. This is the reason why in our proposal, the adjustment that we are proposing is that this three additional spot, on top of the spot that, first, the spot is not going to France. The spot is going to National Association number 5. Let's say that historically was France, but in the past was also occupied by other countries. But giving sport the merit, it means give access to additional champions coming from lower ranked national association. And this is something that we defend in a very firm way, because this will give it opportunity to, for instance, the champion of Scotland to qualify directly to the Champions League without passing through playoff or qualification, or whether this is Austria, whether this is Czech Republic, the country that is there, it doesn't matter, but having more clubs for more countries, the possibility to have their clubs to be qualified directly there. So it's the principle of the sporting merit together with the principle of inclusivity that is very important for us.
We haven't actually asked if this is too much of a good thing, if the actual number and type of European football we have right now is okay. And this is what comes back to me whenever I write about this. I get loads of responses from fans saying, what's wrong with the Champions League now? We quite like it. It feels about right. And actually, that's often the message I get back from players, managers. I remember European Leagues hosted a really good event in London, I think in 2019, where Frank Lampard said pretty much that. What's wrong with the Champions League now? So this brings me to my question, which I know the European Leagues have been talking about. It's almost an assumption now that this is going to change because the big clubs want it. And for the last 6 months, we've seen their threat. We will walk off and we will form our own league. Goodbye. And UEFA are terrified of that. So they're going to get something in the same way they've got the bigger Champions League, in the same way they got a bigger slice of the pie in 2016. The big clubs kind of get what they want. They ask for the stars and they get the moon, right? And this is the way we're going to go. Now, there's a row to be had, though, still, about how many extra games they want. So in 2019, they wanted 14. Now they've come back with 10 guaranteed group stage games, not group stage because they're in this Swiss model league, but 10 games. They've got 6 at the moment. I think Jaco and Alberto, what do you think? What, 8? Is 8 manageable? And before you answer, if they got 10 and there's a little playoff round in there as well, it's actually 100 extra games. That's 100 games that domestic leagues are thinking, great. That's 100 premium, potentially premium games that you're asking the same broadcasters that we ask for our domestic competition. So there's a finite amount of cash out there. That's a concern. And as Jaco said with his compensation answer, you're not supposed to schedule games against European games. Champions League slots, no, League One, League Two, you don't get League One and League Two games, you know, up against Champions League games. Well, actually, you do sometimes because the calendar's insane. But ideally, you don't. You don't get Premier League games. So that's what? When's that going to happen? Is that going to happen in January? So this bigger competition has implications for the finances of domestic leagues. So, Jaco, what is the ideal number? We've got six group stage games. I think the current Champions League is 125 games. This proposal on the table is 225. What's the ideal number here?
The ideal number. I mean, first of all, we were not the one who stepped to UEFA at a certain time and said, UEFA, we really think it's time that you start to innovate and to change to reform your UEFA Champions League model after 24. So this has been really started by the big clubs. The ideal number would be that the number of matches remains as it is. Whether that would be realistic, that is quite doubtful. Because you're right, it started at 14. And this is also where we started in arguing our position, in defining our position also on the current proposal. To what proposal do we compare this current proposal? Do we compare it with the proposal which was presented back in 2019? Or do we compare it with the proposal, what is the current format? If we compare it with the previous proposal back in 2019, this one is better. If we compare it with the current format, if it comes to number of matches, not on the format of the competition, but if we speak about the number of matches, of course, every match which is added to the Champions League especially, could go at the expense of the domestic competitions, the value of the domestic competitions, the value of the Premier League, the Eredivisie, the Austrian Bundesliga, and all competitions across Europe, because they get a serious, bigger competitor with the biggest football brands in Europe, who is increasing the volume of matches and also the volume of interesting matches. So, and this is what you said in the beginning, this system is scalable. It's a flexible system. So it doesn't matter for the, let's say, the fairness, the fair play idea of organizing a proper competition, whether it is scheduled with six matches in the first phase or eight or 10. So therefore, we would like to see that the number of 10 matches is going to be reduced. I mean, and we want to be realistic. We want to be reasonable and also decent. And we have discussed internally, okay, we understand the need from the biggest clubs and UEFA to increase the number of matches, but let's then reduce the increase from 10 to 8, or let's only increase by 2 match days instead of 4 match days. And let's not forget, also because of the fact that you add another 4 teams into the competition, that also means, that would even mean within the original number of the current number of 6 group stage matches, that you already add additional matches into the system as well. And let's not forget that this system foresees in an additional playoff knockout round between the group stage and the knockout phase, which also means an additional 16 matches. Altogether, our proposal would foresee not to add 100 matches, not to add 4 match days, but to add 2 match days and 64 matches into the system. And this is what we propose.
You mentioned you understand the need to increase, but that need to increase simply comes from placating the so-called European super clubs who want more money. That's the only need to increase. And here's our weekly comparison with North American sports, which we do. You know, if you look at the NFL, less is more. There are more days in the calendar year without the NFL than there are with the NFL. If you look at what, and not just the NFL, look at the big bash, the domestic cricket in Australia over the last couple of years has gone from being a really simple competition where they play each other once to this behemoth that goes on for ages, it feels like, where everybody plays each other twice and 5 of the 8 then end up in the playoffs. So less can often be more in sport.
When I say need, I don't mean, and you're absolutely right, it's not because if this would not happen, the big clubs could not survive. But this is the serious, this is the demand, the request, whatever you want to call it. But this is the road, the car which started, the train which departed from the railway station. And we must make sure that it stops at the right moment. But it already departed, to call it that way. Also, I mean, what you said is very important. And when we listen to the fans, they say, yes, I mean, but we don't need more matches because we cannot afford to go to more matches as well. And we want to see also very interest. We want to keep that our domestic competitions remain competitive as well, because we do not only have fans of the biggest clubs in Europe. Most of the fans, their first club at least, which they support, is their, let's say, their region, the club from the city, the town, or the region where they live, or where they are born, or whatever is the binding between the individual fan and the club. And besides that, of course, many fans, I see that with my own children as well, besides having a club in the Dutch Eredivisie, they're also fan of a, or maybe even more, let's say, European powerhouses. But let's not forget about the fans, especially not all those fans who support the smaller and the medium-sized clubs in all leagues, all across Europe, all across the world, in fact.
Alberto, you talked about sporting merit there, and that, from when I talk to people and fans, is the biggest complaint about any kind of restructuring or people getting into competitions on what they've done historically rather than what they're doing currently. That's what bothers fans most, that it wouldn't be fair. When you sit around the table, when you have discussions, when you hear, you know, the European footballing powerhouses talk to each other and somebody says, oh, well, it ought to be based on sporting merit, do they look at you as if you've got three heads?
Look, they of course try to probably to bring the discussion in their direction, right? You know, and once again, you know, nobody doubts that the Champions League is a huge success. You know, also to the great clubs and the great champions that are playing these clubs, you know, so that of course they have some merits, you know, and UEFA knows and realize this, right? You know, that in order to also increase, the commercial value, you know, you need to have this club play. I think that the value and the core principle, that is an important one. You were comparing to American sports, you know, but you know, there is a basic difference between American sport and European sport. European sport is in this pyramid, you know, and it's very much important what you said to link these to the fans, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, everything is done for the public. You need to deliver this dream to all the clubs and to all the fans that one day they could achieve sporting success, you know, and they can hopefully qualify to the Champions League, you know, and this is an important, not to say fundamental element of the European sporting values, you know, that we are building a pyramid and you might be playing in fourth division and maybe you have, five fantastic seasons in a row and you can be up there playing in the Premier Division, you know. So if you break this game, it is something very dangerous, you know, because you could all in a sudden also destroy a bit what is the passion of the fans, and the passion of the fans is also what granted the success of our sport, you know. So I guess that this is an enough argument to put on the table when we are discussing with these clubs. You know, let's keep the dream alive for all the fans, for all the clubs across Europe about, you know, achieving something via their success on the pitch.
Jaco, well, one thing that does come up, as I say, from fans regularly is this idea of calling their bluff. Why? Can you give the reason why, from a man who used to run a domestic league as well, why you really can't just let the elite clubs go form the European Super League?
There's a paradox from a league, individual league perspective. There's always a paradox about how we look at the UEFA club competitions. Because being able to qualify, to have clubs being able to qualify for the UEFA club competitions is very much important for the attractiveness of the domestic competitions. Because it is not only in many competitions. It's not only about winning the championship, winning the trophy and lifting the trophy at the end of the season, but it is also very much about qualifying for either the group stage of the Champions League or qualifying for even qualifying for the Q1, qualifying round one of one of the smaller competitions, because each club is fighting and is aiming to reach his own ambitions. This is on top of the ranking. It's similar to that at the bottom of the ranking. It is very important that you have a system of promotion relegation, because where you can win something, you should also be able to lose something. So if you, it's interesting, for instance, to have the matches which are really about relegating yes or no. The promotion relegation playoff matches, which are organized in many competitions, are most one of the most challenging and interesting matches also commercially to see. So, but the, coming back to the paradox. So on the one side, it's really important for many competitions that they have spots which are giving access to the UEFA club competitions in all its forms. On the other side, the paradox, and this is the paradox, we see the growing influence of UEFA club competitions on the domestic competitions, on the competitive balance in the domestic competitions, with the result that, and this is what we discussed in the beginning, that in more and more competitions, the decisions about who is winning the championships are made earlier in the season than we used to be, and that the different number of champions, domestic champions all across Europe, is going down, is decreasing. It decreased by, let's say, 15 to 20% over the last 5 years compared to the previous, the 5 years before that. So this is the paradox, because we want to be part of this system, but we do not want it to have a detrimental influence on the competitive balance on a domestic level. And this is why we think, this is why we must find a proper balance. We do understand the position of the biggest clubs. We do understand the position of UEFA, but they hopefully also not only understand our positions, but also are going to act accordingly.
Both of you to finish, and Alberto, you maybe go first. Are you worried for the future of some domestic leagues, all domestic leagues, smaller clubs, given what we've been talking about?
That's why this decision is very important, because this decision is probably shaping the next decade of football. Yes, there is this worrying trend that we stressed during this call, and is very well portrayed in this report that we deliver to the football community. Scared is not probably the proper word, but you are also living COVID times, and COVID times, big financial crisis. Like in every financial crisis, the small fishes are always the one that suffer the most. But this is in every industry, and football is not different from other industries, also because we also have to recall the fact that all matches during COVID crisis now are played without fans, right? But the smaller is a league, is a club, the most this competition leave out of also, the support that are having by their fans being in the stadium, because the smaller is a competition and the less is the impact or the importance, for instance, of broadcasting or other commercial revenues. This is just to say that the tendency that has been portrayed during the last decade was, of course, that there is a growing gap. And the growing gap is putting medium and small clubs in difficult financial and sporting sustainability. COVID is also creating probably an additional financial difficulties to the medium and small clubs. This is why this decision is very important, because we can probably try to stop this trend by granting this balance that we have been discussing during the past half an hour.
If I echo clutch at straws then and go, well, actually, Atletico Madrid might win La Liga. Inter Milan might win Serie A. I've mentioned Bodo Glimt winning in Norway instead of Molde. Sporting, I think, might win the Portuguese league. Not necessarily. I mean, they're still big clubs, the majority of them. It's not like a minnow has come from nowhere to win it. But at least slightly, it changes the dominance in two or three leagues for one season at least. Am I clutching at a straw there?
There are always many challenges in professional football. And when you work in this industry, especially if you work on the club level, you have challenges every week, because even after a nice surprised win, you're not certain that you will win next match as well. And this counts for clubs at each level in each competition. And when you work for a league or when you work for an international organization like Alberto and myself are doing, we also have our daily challenges. And the examples you are giving, I mean, this is also, of course, this is proving that luckily we are still in the business of football. We are in the business of sport competitions. And organizing sport competitions means that you have a certain kind of uncertainty. It cannot be, not everything can be predicted that for sure Benfica or Porto will take the championship again. And or that for sure, and then whoever league and whoever club, whatever club, will take the championship again. This is the beauty of sport. And this is what we are aiming for and where we are fighting for, to keep professional football unpredictable. Because that is what sport and football is living for. Because if you go to a football match, if you watch a match on TV, and this is not only about if you know who has won the Australian Open finals, because all of a sudden it was in a news alert, you don't need to see Djokovic again. But if you do not know the result, you might want to see him play tennis against his opponent, because maybe this time he will not win. Unfortunately, also, you see, they have challenges in other sports as well.
It has been absolutely fascinating to talk to you and get your views. And we've taken nearly an hour of your time. But both of us really appreciate you coming on. It's been great to talk to you and get your thoughts.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
That's it. Fascinating from Alberto and Jaco. Thanks once again to them for joining us. Thanks to Matt. And I'm back on Tuesday with David Ornstein. Bye for now. The Athletic.